A great conversation here. Do we have anyone who signed up for open public input? Here. Great. Terrific. Okay. To review with those of you who have signed up, the commission's policy is to provide each citizen with 3 minutes. So we'd like you to come to the front table. When you hear the beeping noise, and we're broadcasting it, we're amplifying it, so we hope we can hear it, we'd like you to conclude your remarks. And if you keep speaking, I will politely interrupt you and tell you it is time to conclude. Okay, the first person is Ron Chase. Would you come forward? And would Lewis Boyd also come forward and get ready? Just and speak kind of close to the mic, not too close, but so we can hear you.
How's this?
That's good.
You ready?
Yes.
Morning, commissioners. My name's Ron Chase. You might remember me from last month's meeting. I'm a recreational sturgeon fisherman from the Puget Sound area and the author of the Save Our Sturgeon petition that was filed last month with 3,000 signatures on it. I'm before you today to reaffirm that our coalition's opposition to the revised Puget Sound sturgeon proposal. We have unanimously voted that our members are opposed to this. Our coalition was contacted by Craig Burley to consider the revised seasons option and two choices of implementation. After careful consideration, we strongly object to the method used to calculate Puget Sound allocation and the season parameters based on the following. There were many alternatives to allocations that exist that have not been considered in this issue, and you'll see them tomorrow when the full reports get given. Most of these were not considered. Managers have based a revision of the proposal on harvest data averaged over the last four seasons and a reduction to that data of 73%, which is a significant number. We contend that conservation ex post facto is a dangerous precedent to set in conservation measures, and that's essentially what is being handed down as a suggestion for this fishery that represents 150 fish to be allocated to all of the Puget Sound sturgeon anglers. A considerably low number that has basically shrunk the parameters of the season to a year-round fishery to a six-week season that essentially falls outside of the window when the sturgeon are most often harvested because they're in the area. We represent that 1.5% of the Columbia River harvest allocated to the Puget Sound does not represent the user of the Puget Sound sturgeon anglers, which we contend may be as high as 25% of the state's recreational sturgeon anglers preside and utilize Puget Sound for recreational opportunity. But this information isn't available because there's no fisheries report associated with the Puget Sound. There's no data beyond harvest records for the Puget Sound fishery. We feel that in order to implement management strategy to the Puget Sound, we should be working from a position of information rather than a position of that they've come from, and that they originally came to the commission asking for a full closure and represented that there was zero fish available. And now I've come with a new plan. So I thank you for your time, and would request that you floor this until the next cycle, and be glad to answer any questions if anyone had any.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Gene Bonderman, would you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Boyd.
Chair Wecker, Commission, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr. My name is Lewis Boyd, a representative of the Puget Sound Sturgeon Coalition. Enclosing your packet, did you receive a packet today? Maybe not. Anyway, well, that's going to make things a little bit tougher, but we'll go through it.
I think we've got it here.
Oh, okay, thank you. Enclosed in your packet, you will find inconsistencies between Puget Sound and other marine areas of close to equal harvest areas of the joint accord that includes Willapa Bay and Tillamook Bay, Oregon. With this material coming from the lower Columbia River White Sturgeon Conservation Plan, marine areas of the joint accord have 365 days a year season with a 5 sturgeon limit per person per year, which includes Puget Sound until this proposed rule change has occurred. Puget Sound's harvest was considered insignificant until several years leading into the harvest of 913, which caught the eye of the department. Region 5 staff has let me know that the preliminary harvest for this last year was 298, which would represent a 326% decrease from the anomaly high harvest year. Our position is that it makes good practical sense to impose consistent and equitable restrictions on all areas of retention sturgeon and marine areas for conservation. Unfortunately, this has not happened. Our proposal to the commission would be to set aside the proposed rule change to the Puget Sound sturgeon issue until the department is willing to assess and develop consistent, equitable restrictions across the board in marine areas and tributaries in the state of Washington for conservation purposes. During this moratorium, we propose that the Puget Sound sturgeon committee, or maybe advisory committee actually, would have a framework to be established in that time period. During these times of budget shortfall, we would be willing to work with the department to establish a voluntary program to collect samples, tape, tag, and want sturgeon in Puget Sound to help the department establish what they do not have now, which is a database to make informed decisions about sturgeon in Puget Sound. We will do what we can on our side to establish a long-lasting working relationship with the department. And thank you for your time, and I'll attempt to answer any questions that you've got.
Any questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ken Cruz, do you please come forward? Mr. Bonderman?
Good morning. I came here basically to speak about sites for crossbows. I've fallen underneath a category which I'm able to use crossbows in this state. But there's a catch. Unless I'm disabled in my eyes, I can't use scopes. And if you take the scope out of the picture, and there's a statute in there that says there's no battery-operated accessories on bows or crossbows, I can't use any type of a red or green dot sight, which means it leaves me with not much, actually nothing. So I just would like to bring it to your attention that something needs to be amended to help with that subject. It's just, you know, it's bad enough walking around and being retired because of something that went wrong on your body, but now I'm jumping hurdles I can't get over anymore. So I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Thank you. Vinton Waldron, would you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Cruz.
My name's Ken Cruz. I'm a commercial crab fisherman, and I know you guys are going to review this today, so I'd just like to bring up a couple points before Rich talks. One of them is that there was a 220,000-pound discrepancy caught 3.5 months after the recreation season's closed, and Rich can probably explain how that happened, but that comes out of the commercial share. So it's at the wholesale level, that's about $1 million worth of crab right now. But what I'd really like to talk about is it's an idea that I had to start the recreational crab season in all areas at the same time rather than starting 2 weeks early in 8-1 and 8-2. And the reason being is that when we start on the July 4th weekend, the tribes have their summer quota that they want to catch. Well, they want to fish before the recreational season begins. So they start sometimes as early as the 5th of June, 10th of June. They're fishing on soft crab. And there was a test done that the tribes test before they fish with our biologists on board. The crabs were at like 60%. It's an 80% start criteria. There was no objection, from what I understand, from the state to begin fishing, although the Upper Skagit tribe did object to starting that early. and they refused to fish with the Swins. The Swins went ahead and fished, caught whatever it was, 500, 600,000 pounds, going through all this soft crab. A week after or a couple days after the Swins quit fishing, it was probably the 22nd of June, the rec season opens on 4th of July weekend. They want to make sure that they fish before the recs start, so they too are fishing on soft crab. Then the recs start, they're fishing on soft crab. You know, if there was a delay of 2 weeks with the rec season, it all starts from the rec season. The tribes are going to fish before the recreational fishermen start, no matter what. And if that date, which is put in the pamphlet, on the weekend of July 4th, the tribes are going to fish before that, and they're going to catch soft crab. And it just seems to make sense to me that if all the regions started at once, it would spread that fleet out. It wouldn't be the million pounds of wreck crab caught in Region 2 like there was this year. It would spread the fleet out. It would give the crab a chance to harden up. The tribes wouldn't be forced to fish so early. And it starts with you guys setting that date, and I'm just concerned with the resource. It's your responsibility, in my mind, to be protecting that resource, and this is just not good management, and I think you really need to look at it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Brian Allison, would you come forward, please? You signed? Okay. Oh. Okay, for number three.
There isn't public input for what?
I think you have to do it now. We don't have public input for item three.
There actually is.
There's not.
But you guys have a preliminary agenda and not the actual agenda.
It's just the way it reads on the internet. It's item number four that there's public input.
Yeah. So this is your chance.
Come on up, Brian.
Yeah. Okay.
Good morning. I'm here as a commercial crab fisherman. I started when I was 12 years old. We went from a 6.5 month season to a 4 month season. And back in October when I was speaking here last, we were pleading our case not to change the policy with the recreational fleet because it was going to do damage to the 150 families that earn their living commercial crabbing, not including all the buyers and the cannery workers. So now it's after the season almost, and I'm here to tell you my 4 month season dropped to 1 month, 2 weeks in Region 2 East. And I'm about 10,000 pounds below what I caught last year. And Rich made the statement that your new policy ruling was going to be about a $5,000 average loss per permit. Well, it's about 40,000 for me. And I consider myself lucky. I was able to get on some crab as we jumped from one area to the next area to the next area and then back to 2 East. Normally I stay in one area, work real hard, and it's just a tough deal to have to pick up and move and move and move. So as you guys look at this and possibly revise it, what's it going to be next year? And is it going to be worse? I think it's a good possibility. And I'm really worried about the resource. It's just getting hit way too hard. There's only a certain pool of crab, and, you know, by the grace of God, we got a six-week season. They were telling us in September that we weren't going to have a season in Two East because the rec fleet took the entire quota, and the 200,000 pounds that were left over, they wanted to save that for the rec winter quota. Now imagine how we were feeling in September when we got all this information that we weren't going to have a season. So just one more question, and I'm a simple-minded fisherman, and I know for a fact you all are a lot smarter than me, but I would like to know who's on this commission that represents the commercial fishermen.
Thank you. Thank you. James Walton, would you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Allison. That was Vinton Waldron. Okay, Mr. Allison.
Okay. Well, first thing I want to do is object that the information sent to me by the Wildlife Commission when I request the emails, I actually, us being here early this morning is a fluke because I intended to testify after option number three because the email I have with the updated agenda on it says that there's public testimony or public input on that specific item. So I wanted to make notes after the report was given by Mr. Childers and then give testimony then. But I guess you're not going to allow that. So I'm going to proceed. Did you get my handout that I brought with me this morning? There were a couple of different documents there. Should have been a couple of spreadsheets and I did. Anyway, you can look at your handouts, I guess, when you get those. But I wanted to go over the numbers, and it would be more beneficial if you had them in front of you. But what I did was I took the state's recreational catch numbers from 2006 through 2011, which is this year, this past season for the recreational summer catch. I did a couple of different averages here on poundage and the percentage of growth that the 2011 season had due to the policy change. And the total average growth for a two-year average was 26% on the overall average and 42%, almost 43% for a five-year average on that. What that boils down to for us as commercial fishers in this year is, as you can see the numbers below you there, if we use a five-year average, it's $2.5 million lost revenue based on the average current prices we were receiving this year, and $1.8 million if you take it on a two-year average there. So anyway, you can see that there's a significant impact for the commercial fishers, and this is simply on a one-year change for the policy 3609 revision. So I just want to reiterate, like we have in the past, that we really need to reconsider this because, as you can see in Region 2 East, it was only 2 years ago that the total state share in that area was 950,000 pounds. And now the state share in that area is 1 million pounds, and the recreational fleet caught 978,000 pounds in the summer fishery alone. And we don't have the statistics or the numbers provided by the state yet for the winter fishery.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Walton.
Yes, I appreciate this opportunity. I've been hunting and fishing probably longer than most people in this room have been alive. As you get older, though, your ability to hunt decreases, and I'm kind of here representing myself, and my primary purpose is in regards to scopes on crossbows, but I don't see why the same argument wouldn't lend itself to scopes on any short-range means of getting food on the table, but my understanding is that a scope, my personal knowledge as well as study, does not increase the range of a crossbow or a bow or even a black powder rifle for that matter. What it does increase is the potential for accuracy. And to disallow them gives the impression that the state game department and the commission wants to have more wounded animals. And I can't believe that's a fact, but that's what not allowing scopes effectively does. Now, as you're probably aware, rifle scopes make effective hunting now out to 1,000 yards. That's about as far as you can see an animal with a high-powered binocular. But it doesn't increase the range of a crossbow or a bow or a muzzleloader a yard. It just increases the effectiveness of it. One of the reasons that we get nice pictures on the front page of the Olympian with an arrow through a goose that's flying around the Capitol is because we're not allowed to use means which gives us more accuracy. And the biggest complaint against bows anyway is that there's more wounded animals, and there's probably no more cruel way for an animal to die than to slowly starve to death or to get poison in their stomach and die from a long-term agonizing death. But particularly for us who no longer have the ability to pull a bow and have the right to use a crossbow, the federal law says that the state's required to increase our ability as much as possible to compete effectively with those that don't have these disabilities. And taking away the right in this state to use a sight, a scope on a crossbow, really decreases the effectiveness. Doesn't decrease the range. A lot of animals get wounded because people think they can open sight them. I used open sights for some 50 years till I no longer could sight on this open sight on my rifle and the game. And the scope made it possible for me to continue to hunt. I've always, with a recurve bow, I've never used a compound bow, a recurve bow, I didn't use sights because if you've shot them a long time, you're a lot more effective without sights. But as you get older and can't pull those, I don't know how you develop the ability to shoot a crossbow just from having your subconscious do it. I know how to do it with a bow, but I don't know how to do it with a crossbow. And I don't see any reason that we're not allowed to use sights unless you really have in mind that we should wound more animals. And I can't possibly conceive that concept. But I appreciate the time, and that's my
thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. Your colleague indicated that it was a battery-operated scope. So are traditional non-electronic or non-battery-operated allowed?
No, no scopes are allowed on bows or crossbows or muzzleloaders. And you can only shoot a crossbow if you're disabled to the point that you can't pull a standard bow, even with a... So you can use a holding mechanism on a standard bow, but you've got to pull it. With a crossbow, you can use a mechanical contrivance to pull the bow. But no, it's not a battery. You can't use a scope, period, on a crossbow. And almost all crossbows are sold with scopes. So you got to buy a scope and then try to retrofit it for sights, and they don't work very effectively.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Duvia?
Question for you, sir. You're right. It would make the devices far more efficient and effective, and probably would reduce some damage or wounded animals. But in the resource, it would also increase the take of the resource because of their efficiencies would increase. Would you prefer to have a scope and not hunt in the late season or during the rut?
Well, I don't... In answer to your question, I mean, people are going to shoot the same distance with a scope or without a scope. It doesn't increase the range, so it doesn't... All it does is keep you, if you shoot an elk, it helps you hit it in the vital area rather than in the stomach or in the butt or in the neck. And all of those are going to be dead animals. The only difference is if you hit them in the heart, you're going to get to take them home. If you hit them in the butt or the belly, that animal is going to die, and then you just keep hunting, hit another in the belly, and miss that one, just keep hunting, and eventually you probably get one to die. So I was born and raised in Idaho. I was born on a range. I've been working with game. I'm a master hunter. I've been working with game and game department my entire life. I worked for the Forest Service. And there's no way that a scope increases the take. It just increases your accuracy. You can't shoot any farther. You can shoot farther with a rifle, and you can shoot more effectively. In fact, they've got scopes out now with adjustments and with windage that you can shoot 1,000 yards. And that's as far as most people had ever spot an animal, but we can't shoot an elk at 50 yards with a scope. We've got to take the chance, and especially us disabled hunters, the reason we're disabled, because we're disabled, we can't hold things steady. We got to brace them and everything. And so the scope just increases the chance for the hunter and increases the chance for the animal. Not to kill them. Hell, I could kill animals all day long. But they're not going to be on my table because they're going to get away. You've got to hit them with a bow or a crossbow or even a muzzleloader in a vital area. It's not like a rifle where if you hit them in the neck, they're going to go down. If you hit them in the backbone, they're going to go down. With a bow, primarily, if you don't hit them in that vital area, in the lungs and heart, they're going to live for a long time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But in answer to your question, if I had a choice, I'd probably rather shoot the late season than the early season.
Yeah.
Okay. You could use a scope. Say maybe only use a scope in the late season.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the open public input. We're scheduled for a break. We're a little late, so let's just take a short break and be back at 10:15. Quick break.